We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. Sovereignty was never ceded.
You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists,
where we talk all things professional, personal, and spiritual.
Joining you as always are your hosts, Georgia Kennedy
and Tiana Catalano.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 3 of season 2.
Yes, yes, episode 3. Very exciting week. We've got some pretty cool guests who we, how did we find out about them? Oh, through COVID. Through the lockdown and Instagram and stuff. And we just reached out. We were like, this is pretty cool. They're doing some pretty different stuff to what they normally do in terms of, you know, Manali's a musical theatre performer who's in Harry Potter at the moment. And then her partner Trevor is a musician and composer and now has totally delved into the producing world. So pretty exciting chat.
We really loved it. It was something different as well to talk about sort of experience and experience dollars, as they called it, and the producing side of things, which we don't really talk about as much on this podcast. So it was great to do something a bit different.
Yes, and they're so cute.
Oh, like, they were such a beautiful couple. Yeah, they're a gorgeous couple. We love to see it.
But let's do our riff.
Yes. P.S. It is lockdown at the moment in Perth. We've had a pretty crazy week. We're all okay though. So we are recording from separate places. I am recording with a older microphone, which has a sock on it currently. So it might be a bit lower quality than Tiana's for this episode. So apologies for that.
Yes, but we're all good in the actual episode bit. So enjoy.
Riff of the week. Riff
of the week. I will go because I'm so excited about this one and I feel like it's been around Instagram for a while on social media. It's a sin. It's on Stan in Australia and it is genuinely one of the best TV shows I've seen in the past year, hands down. It's about a group of 20-year-olds living through the AIDS epidemic in London throughout the 80s. And it's an incredible script. It is absolutely beautiful and uplifting and heartbreaking all at the same time. It's hard to talk about it too much without getting emotional because it was so beautiful and without giving too much away. So that is the premise. I absolutely urge everyone to see It's a Sin. It's genuinely incredible. I love, love, love it. I love it.
Yeah, funny you say that because yesterday I listened to the new Shameless episode. And that was their recommendation for the week as well. And talking about like a topic like that, that it has been, you know, in commas, like done, it can still be so effective even today, you know, and bringing fresh eyes to it and whatnot. So I'm very keen to see it. I have not seen it yet. But yeah. I watched something a little bit, probably a bit more trashy in the past week in lockdown. I've been watching Tiny Pretty Things on Netflix.
The ballet one,
yeah. And I just kind of picked it on a whim. I was just like, oh, that looks cool. And I think it's a Netflix original, so it kind of, you know, is at the top of the feed. And the script isn't amazing. It's really not. Some of the scenes you just like cringe, but it is totally like bringing me back to my Center Stage days. Like Center Stage was my favorite film of all time. I loved Step Up. I loved Honey. I loved Stomp the Yard. Like every kind of dance film, they all have the same like storyline, but I still just like could not get enough. And I'm just getting those vibes now. And the thing that was like really exciting about it for me is that it was like the dancers were them. Like they didn't have doubles. Like it was all them. Oh, they're all doing the dance and they're phenomenal. Like they're so cool. And it's like, it's not just ballet. Like they do a lot of contemporary stuff and they also have like hip hop in there as well. So it was really nice to see that, because I feel like growing up you would see a lot of doubles and it's kind of like, oh yeah, like they're awesome, but it wasn't really them, you know. So that was really nice to see. And then some of the narration like really ties in like ballet or dance kind of terminology with like life metaphors, and I really like that too. Like sometimes they really like do it well, and then sometimes it's just like your trashy kind of like Gossip Girl kind of drama, you know, this person's like trying to sabotage that person and whatever. So I think it's a good balance. I've quite enjoyed it.
Nice.
So yeah, that's my riff. I don't know if I would suggest it for everyone. I think this is a very like niche thing to me, but
yeah,
I have enjoyed it. So there you go.
Manali is a singer, writer, and actor who graduated from the Victorian College of Arts in 2018. She is heavily influenced by pop, R&B, soul, and funk artists. She loves a snappy rap punchline, NASA merch, and creating visuals for Ultrafine. Manali is currently playing Rose Granger Weasley in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in Melbourne. Cheva's musical career started with piano at age 5, and after getting hooked on jazz in high school big band, he has recently completed an honours degree in music composition at the VCA and the Melbourne Conservatory of Music.
He has spent the last several years honing his production and arranging skills and feels at home scoring for symphony orchestra, as he does programming absolutely filthy synth patches on his Hydrosynth. Ultrafine is their first project together. They take their musical inspiration from pop, jazz, R&B, and funk without confining themselves to a genre and whilst keeping an ear out for the freshest production techniques. They write and produce every element together, staying creative and curious while giving themselves and their listeners a good excuse to get up and dance.
Hello, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
So we like to start our interviews with some quick fire questions. And our first one is, do you have any arts recommendations for us?
We actually do. The biggest one probably is this TV show on Netflix. It's like a reality show about glass blowing, and it's called Blown Away. And it's like
so good.
It's so good. And it's just like one of those things where it's like, this is such a niche and everyone in it is like at the top of their game in, you know, in what they do. And it's just like really exciting to watch.
Really exploring, like, wouldn't have thought about all the art and craft that goes into glass blowing, but it's still happening. Yeah,
and it's like such a physical thing as well, like using their whole body, like being in this like really hot environment and everything's so stressful and the glass could break at any point.
Maybe it's... check out your local glass blowers.
Support local businesses, especially glass blowers.
Okay, that keeps getting recommended to me on my Netflix and I keep going, I'm not sure, but I think you guys have convinced me. I'm going to have a look.
Yeah, it's really good.
Have a check out of some glass blowing.
Yeah.
Okay, now another question that we have is, what is an experience that has really shaped or changed you as an artist? Was there something that you saw, a play that you went to, something that really moved you?
It's probably a meeting and working with Manali actually really changed a lot of how I work and approach not just writing for myself, but collaborating. And I don't know, it was kind of like a big turning point when we started to work together creatively.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. It's just like we've, everything I made before, like starting to work creatively with Trev was like a completely different direction. So it's like opens up a whole new world of possibilities that you know, we didn't even know we could do, like signs or something. I personally never thought I'd make anything like that.
No, neither.
So, yeah. It's
really good.
Sorry to get all soppy so fast.
Beautiful. Oh, goals. Cool. I've
never had an answer like that.
No, that's so nice.
Oh, my gosh. So good. And we'll talk more about Ultrafine later. Yeah. We're so excited to delve into that. But before we go there, do you have any funny mishap stories? So I guess like it's pretty easy, live theatre, things go wrong all the time. But in terms of being a musician and producer, are there any times where things have just gone wrong or anything like that?
Oh, maybe not like a technical issue, but we got commissioned this one time last year to write a song for an ad. I'm not going to name products or companies, but we, in the process of writing this jingle, they gave us the first brief, which was to write a soft, jazzy ballad. And we wrote them. We were like, all right, great, we can do this. This is right up our alley. So we sent them this demo of this nice, soft, jazzy ballad.
Yeah, super cheesy, super to the brief. Mm.
To the brief. Exactly, to the brief.
And then with a few revisions back and forth, we were like, so you've never actually sent us a reference. You've just said soft jazzy ballad, and they kept like sending it back and be like, oh, we want it to be a bit more upbeat, or like using really vague terms. And then we were like, can you just send us a track of what you want it to sound like your ideal soft jazzy ballad so we can do it justice. And they sent back Stronger by Kelly Clarkson.
They said we want something younger with more beats in it. Yeah.
We were thinking younger and with beats.
Oh my god, that's the ultimate jazz song.
Yeah. It's the most well-known jazz ballad of our lifetimes, honestly. Nice. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Experience Dollars. In our sort of emailing with you, we mentioned Experience Dollars and doing things for free for the experience. What has your experience been with that? And what do you think needs to change around that kind of term and doing things for free? And when is there a point when you need to stop and, you know, ask for what you think you and your work is worth?
Mm. Well, to speak to that last bit, always, you should always know where your limitations and where your strengths lie, and people should always be supporting themselves and know what their work is worth. I just think that the industry standard that's kind of going out is really old-fashioned in this sense that people expect you to do things for free, or people expect you to put in hours and hours of labor to not get return and things like that. And that's why young independent artists find it so difficult to stand up for themselves, because they're like, oh, this person is, you know, important, or they've been in the industry longer, so they must know what's right. They must know what the standard is.
I think, yeah, a lot of those old industry ways are built on these older, like 20th century power structures about you can't be an artist or release music or do anything about this if you don't have the hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars that that major labels or like major management companies or all of these things have. And now that they've realized that with just like so much has changed in the world with the information age, and especially that, or including arts and music, artists have realized that they no longer need these labels to release things. You can just have a laptop and you can have an internet connection, and that's, you have the same access to resources as a $200,000 studio a couple of decades ago. And I think a lot of it comes from, I don't know, yeah, just them perpetuating that is the way to do it. And just to link back to Experience Dollars as well, there's a lot of there's so much undercutting in the arts industry about who can do it for cheaper, because it's such a saturated market and who can get the gig. But at the end of the day, it's difficult to gauge, like you said, to gauge your worth and gauge what you can do, because it's so much of it is a quest for validation from others and from the people who are viewing your products. And if you get that validation from inside, that if you have that self-belief, then you can charge what you're worth. And at the end of the day, you do really get what you pay for as well.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
It's difficult to understand your worth for all artists, especially because of this like old standard that it's like, oh, I should be grateful for this opportunity. I don't need to get paid. Like that way of thinking just seems really outdated, especially if you know you have something good and you know people are approaching you because, you know, they've never heard something like what you make, for example. So it can be so hard for young people, especially like, you know, people our age and even younger who are already in the biz. Like, it can be so hard for them to like actually claim their space and claim their spot, like somewhere that they earned and deserve to. That can still be really difficult, which is such a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Like, in our course, at least for music theater, we've never really been told what our like worth is in money. It's always kind of just like you just assess it for what it is and then go by that. And it's interesting because my sister's done like a makeup course, and there's such a understanding within that industry that you don't go below this price, because if you go below that price, it ruins sorry, ruins the standard for everyone else. Mm. And then everyone has to lower their worth because someone else is trying to compete with those prices.
Yeah.
And you just don't really get taught about that at institutions, I feel. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did you guys ever get that from your lecturers or anyone before you left?
I had it a little bit. I did like a classical composing course at uni, and they did they talked to us a little bit about like the APRA AMCAS guidelines for like per minute and per stave like scoring and things like that. But that's a very specific instance where they say this is how much you get paid per minute. And it doesn't really carry across into like more popular forms of music or things that aren't on the written page.
Yeah.
So I think they've got a little bit of catching up to do in terms of the reality of the industry and the reality of pay rates.
Yeah. And I was just such a stranger to all of it until last year when we actually, you know, when we had our first commission or, you know, when we started actually thinking seriously about releasing as Ultrafine. Because I did music theatre at VCA as, you know, same sort of course. And it was like, you're just lucky if someone likes you. You happen to be in the right place at the right time. Just be grateful that you have this opportunity, that you got into this big show. Don't ever complain about anything. Don't ask for more than, you know, I feel like that's such a standard in our industry. It's like, oh, wow, we're so lucky. And it's like, yes, we are lucky. No one's not acknowledging that. But I think to a point, it's like, okay, cool. I've worked really hard for this. I actually deserve a bit more. And, you know, that's... You know, it's been really powerful over the last year with all those contract negotiations with MEAA and Hamilton and Harry Potter happening. That's been amazing because we're seeing such a turnover and shift in the industry's attitude towards paying their artists correctly and acknowledging them monetarily for the amount of effort they put in, not just because they get exposure from being in a big show or whatever. So like this whole year has been a really steep learning curve for me, for sure, to be like, okay, cool. What can we expect from the industry? And yes, it is about making the art and making the music, but the dream is to be able to make money off what you love to do. And that has to be possible. You know, we've seen it. We've seen it work for people. That has to be possible for independence too.
Yeah, totally. Because it would be a different story if it was a sports person that, you know, probably has the same kind of training for years and years and years and invests so much money into being this, you know, top tier athlete. And you wouldn't expect them to have a second job and do what they do. You know, it's just, it's crazy the difference in mentality and the whole, I saw a really funny meme the other day where it was just like me making a meal with my exposure money. And it was just like empty things. It was just like, sick, I got exposure, but I can't eat, you know. And it's just, it's so tricky. Mm. And even a company here in Perth, you know, like, people get caught out because they may not be represented by an agent. I think that's the difference with musical theatre and acting as well, is like that bartering kind of gets taken away from your hands because that's what your manager or agent does. But because these people don't have representation, they're getting paid nothing. And then all the money goes to the higher ups behind the scenes and they just don't even question it, you know. Yeah. But because COVID happened, Perth artists are coming back with representation and they're finally getting like equity minimums, you know. And it's just, it's crazy. It's, and I just hadn't really no idea about it because I've never, like, not even finished yet, so I'm just like, oh god.
I mean, it's daunting. Even with auditions and callbacks, you're asked to do 3 scenes, 3 songs, 5 dances for 5 different shows within a week, and it's a lot, and you have to go, well, I've got a full-time job or I'm at uni and I need to prioritize my self-care as well. And sometimes that feels like they're trying to monopolize on your passion and try to get all of this out of you for free. I think even the audition process is, that's interesting as well. How that all works, and I feel like there should be some change around that.
But it's really exciting that you're saying they're changing things within the industry right now with Harry Potter and whatnot. They've reviewed those.
There have been a few negotiations. The ones last year were super public and they were hosting Zoom forums for actors to come and talk about, you know, what they feel like they deserve. Should we get paid extra when we do promo? Like things like that, which is, again, one of those things that where the old ways are being kind of kicked out. And it's like, cool, it's one of those things we were talking about the other day. It's like, just in a broader social context, it's those things that, you know, like racism, sexism, all of that stuff, it's never been okay. Like, and people just think it's been okay because that's how it's been. But it's never been fine. And now people are just like, okay, cool, we actually don't have to settle for that anymore. We understand our power now. And it would be really great if we could get some guidelines like that for recording, like things that can be enforced for like recording artists and producers.
Yeah, it's tricky because the industry is changing so, so quickly.
Mm.
And the legal system always lags however many years behind what's actually happening.
So true.
And yeah, I think it'll come, but it'll be slow and it won't always be up to date with the technology that's, you know, constantly changing how the industry works.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'll get there.
Yeah, it'll get there, hopefully. Slowly.
Yeah, the more that we vocalize our, you know, thoughts about it, I think the more power we have as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah,
scary, that's... and it's going to be a big process.
Yeah, that's probably like the truest thing about our generation and realizing that we've always had this power and how to harness it. Because we understand the internet, we understand technology, we know how to use our voice in this like global, you know, context. And that's really, really incredible.
Yeah, the visibility thing's really good as well. You can see now just so many of my favorite artists, probably your favorite artists as well, are independent. They don't have any label, they don't have any management, but they're making a lot more than a living wage from being able to do what they do completely independently. And I think that visibility has really kind of shaken and scared a few of the big players. And now that more people can see that they don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
And with that, because you're doing it independently, does that mean that you have, or do you feel that you have more creative license with the kind of music that you produce because it's really true to you and not being controlled by a label or a manager?
Oh, yeah. We have unlimited creative license. We could write whatever we want.
Yeah.
The downside of that is that, of course, we don't have Sony Music's multi-million-dollar marketing budget, but also we can write literally whatever we want without what they think might sell. Because... I don't know, it's a bit of a catch-22, isn't it, when you think about when people say, oh, like, we know this sells because that's what's been selling in the past, and then they try to push that as what currently must be done. And that works in a lot of cases, but also people don't really know what they want until it's out there and it's been released and it's new and it's fresh and no one's had control over it. So it's a double-edged sword, I guess.
And it's a risk, but we would rather take that than have, like, you know, a year or something contract with Sony where, you know, we have to push out an album in a year while we're working day jobs or, you know, whatever. Like, we get to do what we want in our own time frame. Yeah, we have to, you know, kind of fiddle with and figure out the Facebook marketing thing, but it's fine. Like, it really has been worth it. And like, it's really affirming to know that, you know, we've put all this work in, and then our families and friends and like people like you, like reaching out to want to talk to us and to like promote our stuff. And there's no financial or, you know, legal walls being put up like, oh, you can't promote here, or you have to only promote this way. Like the community has like really shown up for us for this first release. So that feels really affirming that, okay, cool. We maybe didn't need that in the first place. Maybe we're going to be fine. So that's, you know, everyone's been super lovely. We're really grateful for that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. And speaking on that, tell us about how it all came about and when you started writing music. Did you know that you were going to have your own single released one day and it was going to be ultra fine and everything like that? How did it come about?
Oh.
Yeah, where to begin?
Yeah, where to begin? That's a tricky one.
I was going to say, I saw you during COVID on a couple of the live like stream things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you did, what was it? From the album Orange. Why am I forgetting the artist?
Oh, Super Rich Kids by Frank Ocean.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. And I was like, okay, because I love MT, right? Like, don't get me wrong, but it was just like, oh my God, this is what I'm here for. That was like the best part of my night when I watched that. I was just like, this is it. That is so good. I'm so inspired by that. I was like, that would have been so much fun. You know, it was so good. But yeah, anyway, so I mean, I saw you guys like from that and I was like straight away like, yep,
These people are
following them. Thank you. That's really nice of you. Yeah, that was like a big, those live from your living room segments were like really massive for us as like a team to figure out what we, it was just like practicing. It was the practice, of producing something and we would choose songs that we chose songs that we thought we could change. Like not that they could like use more work, but like songs where we listen to it and we're like, cool, we can put a spin on this. Because some songs you listen to and you're like, this is finished, I wish I wrote this. But then there's other songs where you're kind of just like, oh, okay, cool, let's spice it up. And so that was kind of our practice over quarantine. And I think the first time we wrote a song together was 2020, on the 14th of January, which was a year between the first release of our single. So it was like a bit of a day.
You were just like, should we write a song together? Because I was sitting at the piano just playing some things and you're like, let's write a song.
Yeah.
And then
We just did. We
smashed it out in a few hours.
Yeah, it was like the quickest I've ever written a song in my life.
And we kind of came to the conclusion that we actually work really, we have very complementary skill sets and bounce ideas off of each other in really like constructive and new, fresh ways.
Which is just like, you know, you just never expect that from someone you're trying to date. Like, just like, what? Like, oh, you mean this as well? Like, we're gonna collaborate like this too? Cool. Yeah. And so that was kind of the first time. And then we developed everything over quarantine. And then I think August or September, we were like, we're going to pump out a song a month. And the first kind of instance of Signs was the first one that we wrote. And then we wrote a few more. And then we were just like, we got to come back to this one. Like, this, we have something here. And the turnaround process was quite quick. Like, we kind of decided we were going to release it in January, like a month before.
Yeah.
So we had just had to get everything polished.
Probably, the total time, would you say 3 months?
Yeah, probably 3 months.
Which was longer than we spent on anything else. Yeah. But it's, we gave ourselves that deadline, but also it was probably, it was a lot of learning things. It was a lot of learning about how, because we'd written so many things before in much shorter time frames, but we hadn't written something with that very lofty goal of, oh, this is going to be a commercial release. If we want this to be something that you could hear on the radio, then that's, we've got to sink a lot more work into it than we've done with anything else. So it was a really, really, really good, like learning and practicing process that way.
And it was really fun. Like, we would take a few weeks off listening to it and then come back to it and like add things, take away things. Like, it was such a holistic and involved process, which I've never experienced that before in creating something new. And you know, there's just like lots of fun sounds and Easter eggs. Like, we've really tried to make it like the lasagna of all sounds. Like, we've really just we just went hard and we tried to make it, you know, something that was really massive and expansive and just like, this is us, here we are, we're trying something new. And you know, we're just really happy that, like, we're happy with it. Everyone's been so supportive about it, so, you know, it's just been like, I don't know, I guess a year's worth of learning together in order to make something, like, prove to ourselves that we can make something great.
Beautiful. And on that, how does it feel to explore creative or career options different to the industries or styles that you've trained in? Because I know that you both come from different backgrounds to the sound that I hear within Ultrafine and Signs.
You can take this one first.
Okay. Well, I had a, growing up and throughout high school, I had like a jazz background. I played in the big bands. I played trumpet. I played jazz piano. And that was pretty much all I did. I listened to, you know, a bit of Stevie Wonder, a bit of the classics, but it was a lot of jazz. And then I started uni and I did a year and a bit of the classical trumpet course. And then I realized I was really just quite not cut out to be a classical trumpet player. So I switched to composing because, you know, who doesn't like writing music? And I had been writing music since I was, you know, a kid and a teenager. And I thought it would fill in a few gaps as well, because that course that I ended up doing, which was composition at the MCM, was it's very classical based. It's very, here's how you write themes and ostinatos and motifs, and here's how you orchestrate things. And it was just an entirely new world. And I was, it was sometimes a bit of a slog at times, just because I didn't have that much of a classical background as my peers, but it was really, really valuable, I think, to fill in a lot of gaps. I remember my trumpet teacher saying, oh, you shouldn't study jazz at the VCA because you can just learn that in your own time, which I don't want to upset any jazz kids at the VCA because I know that that's probably not entirely true. But it was, I don't know, I've always been wanting to fill in as many gaps in my musical knowledge as I can. Mm. So jazz, classical, and then over the past few years, I've really just been trying to hone my like production, sound design and mixing skills, which wasn't from, I didn't do any courses on that. It probably would have been a lot quicker if I had taken some courses. It was all self-taught because there's just so much stuff on the internet these days, man. You can learn anything from YouTube. Mm. So I don't know. What is the question again?
How does it feel to move away from the from the field that you studied?
I was gonna circle around to that eventually.
It's relevant. Everything you said is relevant.
It's a long walk. But good, I would say. I'd say it's good. It's been because all of these techniques that at least were in my background about jazz harmony and rhythm and groove, but also orchestration and arrangement, it's really, really given me an appreciation for pop music and like a lot of radio hits that you hear on the music. I used to be such a jazz snob and be like, oh, pop music, because anyone can do that. But the more I listen to it, the more I realize there's so much craftsmanship that goes into all of this stuff. There's so many like tiny, finessed little details. There's so much that goes into the arrangement. Mm. I remember the first one of the big ones that I was just kind of in awe of was Finesse. Bruno Mars. Mm. And I was just like listening to it, realizing every single element of that song is a hook. Everything in there has been so perfectly crafted, interlocking arrangement wise. Like that to me was just one of the pinnacles of pop of the past few years. Mm. So it's been really, really a really good experience to have. And I've been really, really lucky as well to be able to have such incredible teachers and support over the years to have that breadth of knowledge. Mm. But yeah, that's me. Sorry, that's been talking for quite a while.
No, it's all. I love listening to you talk. Yeah, I think it's like, we come from very different backgrounds. Obviously, I grew up singing and dancing and acting and writing little plays and writing songs in my bedroom about some little 8-year-old dude from the playground, like growing up doing that. And then I didn't actually think about studying the arts until like 2 weeks before submissions for all the art schools closed. And I was like, what if I asked my singing teacher, like, what if I was to do like, I don't know, like what kind of course should I do? She's like, what about music theater? Like, you like musicals? And I was like, yeah, actually, then I get to act and sing at the same time. That sounds good. So I just kind of did that and was, you know, very lucky to get into VCA and did that for 3 years. And it's a completely different area of knowledge. But again, like Trevor said, everything that I've learnt in that space is so applicable to what we do in different ways. And I think spending all that time in doing a music theatre degree, so much of it is about interpretation, and you're not, it doesn't really, you're kind of creating an interpretation rather than creating an original text or something like that. And that, I think that's amazing, because as someone who understands and views and can analyze music and enjoys to do that, that was something about music theater that I really loved, because I could completely turn a song on its head if I chose to see it a particular way. And I feel that way about people getting to listen to pop music as well. When I listen to pop music, I like to dissect the lyrics and be like, I wonder what this means. I wonder how this could, you know, how this lyric applies to this other motif that they've used in the chorus or something like that. Those skills kind of link up in that way. But since I've started school, I just kind of like did school, did VCA, did like a year and a half of Potter before everything kind of closed down with, you know, 2020. And then over the last year, it's just, like Trev said, just been like internet and like researching things and figuring out what we want to make and what our sound should be and listening to so much music, just like, especially coming from a music theater sort of background over the last 5 years. The first year was kind of, I was surprised by how some of my peers only listened to music theater. And I was like, I don't understand that. And so I would like listen to music theater and I'd be like, yeah, I love this album, like this cast recording, like this is great. Okay, cool. What more? Like, how could we elevate this? What are elements of that that could go in pop music? Like things like that. And I think at the end of the day, one of my biggest passions is just storytelling. And I think if something can tell a story and evoke an emotion and create an atmosphere really successfully, then that's a piece of art worthy of our time, I believe. And within all those storytelling elements, it just can go so deep and so far. Like the possibilities really are truly endless. And you never stop learning about it. Like it just feels so wonderful to be able to see the world in this like limitless way in order to create something that touches people and things like that. And so, you know, gone on a tangent, but I think it's been nice exploring something different to what I was trained in, but something I'd always wanted to do before my training. And so beyond this, I'm sure we'll experiment with other things, other parts of, we really love to, like from our living room, things that you would have seen, like we love to film and edit and things like that. So we'd love to explore that more. And, you know, yeah, it just feels like we're kind of just making our baby steps in the industry as like creatives. So, you know, it just feels like there's the world's our oyster. That feels pretty good. Yeah.
Beautiful. You talked a lot about lyrics and creating a story and figuring out motifs. I'd love to learn about your process when you come to writing lyrics and what that process was like on Signs and what kind of story that you wanted to tell with your lyrics as well.
Yeah, it was a super collaborative process. Like we both put in so much work to try and say what we wanted to say as efficiently but also as evocatively as possible. And essentially the story of the song was inspired by when we first met and, you know, having come out of places where we weren't really ready to trust another person yet, but feeling drawn to someone, feeling drawn to getting to know them, and kind of over the course of a night when you're dancing with someone, maybe thinking that this could be something or thinking this could be something special. And yeah, I guess like it's kind of about that moment where you meet someone that you know is going to change your life. You just know that if you want that, you have to go all in.
Yeah, but it's scary.
It's terrifying.
And you're not sure if you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's kind of how the story is told, isn't it? It's like the first verse is a bit... The verses and the pre-choruses are in the form of an inner monologue, and then the chorus is you're finally speaking to the other person.
Yeah. And we didn't realize that we'd done that until like a week ago. We're like, oh, isn't this crazy? Like even things like that where you approach something you've made as a listener again. Like that is... That's so invaluable as well. So yeah, we just wanted to kind of immortalize our little story and do justice to it, you know? Yeah.
Love that. Beautiful. So nice. So nice. So for our final questions, wrapping it up, do you have any advice that you would give to your younger self having been through the experiences you've had so far?
Yeah, do you want
to? Yeah. Yeah, I think I would just say don't ever close yourself off to learning. And I think there was probably a time when I was 16 where I was like the lead in the musical in high school, and I thought that was the whole world, and I was like, wow, I've made it. And I was like in that place when I was, you know, a kid, and I would probably go back to her and be like, there's so much more outside of here that you don't even know how to dream up. Like, don't ever think you're finished and think it's done. There's so much more to learn and to stay curious about. So I would say to her, feed your curiosity, read, watch things that inspire you, engage with people who inspire you, and don't ever stop learning.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I would probably say, yeah, probably similar things. One is the big one, of course, which is that everybody always should have at any stage of their life, which is to never stop learning and always be open to new experiences and new new ways of thinking and new, I guess, zeroing back into this new genres of music, new types of music, new things, new artistic experiences that can affect you in ways that you don't realize. Mm. And probably also I'd tell my younger self, just believe in yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like there's so much self-doubt that comes with making any type of art or putting anything out there into the world.
Yeah.
And it's I struggled with perfectionism a lot when I was even a few years ago and now a little bit as well. I feel like that's a really common story among people who are making things, which is you want to make like the one perfect thing, and if it's not perfect then you can't show anybody or you can't release it, you can't put it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's really paralyzing.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say don't be such a perfectionist, believe in yourself a little bit more, it'll be fine, just keep working.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what brings you the most joy as an artist?
It's going to sound really cheesy, but I guess like making people smile and making people like think and feel and feel and connect a certain way to something that you've made. That's all you can really ask for.
Yeah.
Is to have that bit of connection and to have someone be like, "Oh, that actually, like, I actually really felt something when I listened or saw that." I think that's the height of compliments, and you know.
Yeah, or like I really related to or resonated with that story. Like, we've been, I mean, I personally have been a listener for longer than I've been a creator, because I just didn't think that I could be someone that made anything or had anything to say. And so I guess all of those years of listening and hearing and analyzing and developing that ear, I've just become so thankful and find so much joy in hearing other people's stories. And I guess it's like the inverse of what you said. I like being that person that's like, oh wow, this is changing me as I'm listening to it, as I'm watching it. And like, just again, that connection, that communication that art brings, it's a language everyone understands. It's something that connects people, especially in the time we're living in right now, where families aren't in the same place and people aren't feeling, you know, connected to other human beings. Like, art has been such a savior in this time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely just like getting to hear other people's stories, engaging and connecting with them brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah, that's so nice. That just makes me think, randomly the other day I listened to Anastasia, like the musical, because I hadn't yet, and it was amazing getting that feeling like I did when I was a kid, and I would watch that movie. Yeah. And realizing, oh my god, this really moved me, and I had no idea, like I was just, you know, digesting this thing, and it holds such a special place in my heart and makes me feel a certain way. And it's really cool when you become the actual like practitioner of it, and you go, oh my god, that is what I want to give to the people, like that is, you know, just amazing.
It's really interesting what you said about like it's really interesting what you said about like being a kid as well, and when you're a child and you're listening to something or doing something that brings you joy, there's such little judgment attached to why you love it and how much you love it. And as adults, finding something that we don't judge ourselves for loving is just like, you know, I feel like people are, as we get later into our 20s, that'll probably be more prevalent. But I know I've just like judged myself for so many things that I enjoy, or judge myself for like saying out loud something that I love, and like, you know, that sucks.
Just say no to peer pressure.
Yeah, no, say no to peer pressure. Listen to what you love, and like, it's about finding that like childlike wonder and joy of like, oh, this makes me feel so good, I wonder why. And then like asking yourself like, what about it is like, make like, oh my gosh, when you said Anastasia, like I literally just got goosebumps thinking about that Journey to the Past song. Like, it's just so well written. It's just like, it's just one of the best music theater songs I think I've ever heard. It's just, and that has that like childlike joy and anticipation about it, and like that's so powerful to recognize you still have inside you as an adult, like when you listen to something that you loved as a kid.
Totally. Absolutely. And it just like takes you away from the world for a bit, which is just magical. It's so cool. But it's finding the inner child is hard in this kind of world, but it's definitely something that's so freeing as an artist. I totally agree. And our last question is, what is something that you would like to change within the Australian arts industry?
I think representation is my biggest thing at the moment, especially if we're speaking to all industries, music theater, you know, performance, theater, recording, like, it's always been really important to me because I never grew up seeing people like me. And now we've got this amazing kind of shift in the, you know, in the social mind of what people want to see and who deserves to be included finally. And I think it's going to be a long time before anyone comes to a point where we're like, okay, cool, we're satisfied with this amount of representation. It's going to take forever, but that's something I think we should all be striving towards.
That's a really good point. It's also not just about the people you see as well. It's about the producers and managers and all these other people. Because that's definitely needs to be some diversification and more representation of just different people in those behind the scenes roles as well, because that's a lot of probably what contributes to what we see in the front of stage.
It's where all the big decisions get made. It's where all the laws get passed. It all starts at the top.
Changing the gatekeepers is such a
We think that's really important for sure.
Definitely.
Beautiful. And even me connecting with you and we kind of look similar and I go, okay, beautiful, there's another woman like me that's doing amazing, beautiful things in this industry and we can connect and, you know, there are other people like you doing brilliant things. Even just having that person there to see is really exciting and means a lot, especially for the little girl who hoped and dreamed to perform and didn't see herself represented. So I absolutely hear you with that. It's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It's been awesome.
Really enjoyed it. Can't wait to hear your future music.
Thank
you so much for having us.
Really enjoyed it.
Too. And thank you so much for having us. That was a really great chat.
I just love that. I loved that chat. It was so nice to see them together, you know, like we see them on Instagram and stuff, but they're just such lovely people. And I feel very inspired to kind of take charge with my own artistry and know my worth. And I think there's so much power on banding together and really fighting for the work that we do and the amount of time we put in. It's crazy. We dedicate our whole lives to this stuff and yet get pushed around. It's crazy. Hey, Georgia.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I think as well, it's really admirable that they are producing their own work. And I think in today's day and age, as I said, you don't need to sign with a label. You don't need to sign with Sony Music to put your work out there and get it seen and have people enjoying it and getting up and boogieing to it. So, yeah, we absolutely loved this chat and we hope you did too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Company. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on our Instagram at CompanyPod or our Facebook page. Also, make sure to leave a review on our iTunes or Spotify. Big shout out to our producing team, me, David Duquettis, and our wonderful hosts, Georgia Kennedy and Tiana Catalano. Until next time, see ya!